Let's do this thing, shall we? How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the show. Welcome to your Friday morning. Welcome to your weekend with Sports Radio TSN 1200. Glad you're along for this 23rd day of October 2020. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you, and you are waking up to, well, we're on the cusp of what should be a very fine day. Maybe the last of the really warm days we're going to get before winter hits, because later on today, we're talking humidity on the 23rd of October. So we're just going to start with clouds. We'll see some sunshine, though, later on today. And 21 will be the high, but a Humidex reading at 26. Going to be super windy today as well. So enjoy the day today, because that's all going to move out tomorrow. We're going to see some showers, mainly in the morning. A cloudy day. Tomorrow's high will be 6 degrees. That's right. 26 today, 6 tomorrow. And then for Sunday, sunshine and 5 degrees. And not looking much warmer for most of next week. In fact, there's even the possibility of a flurry or two at some point next week. But we'll leave that to next week. We'll enjoy today. Going to be a beauty. It's already 10 degrees as we say good morning to Sean Simpson, who's always fired up on a Friday morning. How you doing this morning, Simmer?
Weather itself. Slept with the old window open last night. So ready to rock and roll for a good show and excited for the weekend.
All right, good.
Anything How you planned? Feeling with the... No. Yeah, that's actually no. I have nothing planned.
Nothing
well,
planned.
I'm going to spend time with Mira and the boys, and we'll hang out in the dacha in Riverside South. But yeah, what the hell do you plan these days other than celebrating the end of your cleanse? What do you got cooking? A little golf action?
Hey. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there'll be wall to wall golf being played this weekend, particularly.
Today is a day where you should, based on where the world is at, you know what? I know you want to play well, but first of all, you should hire a caddy, which I'm recommending Hammer. You should just walk the course today and just enjoy life, right? It doesn't matter if you hit 1,000. Like, just, hey, today, that's utopia. That's going to be utopia out there. What's that?
You got to go out there and win. You got to go out there and better yourself.
No. I understand where you're coming from on that one.
Yeah, you're coming out of a zen moment where you've cleaned out your pipes. You're going to get out to the golf course. I just think you just walk there and just say, hey, you know what? Got to take this all in because it could be the last one as far as the weather.
Yeah, okay? Absolutely. Absolutely. But
do you think Hammer would be a nice caddy? You could get him in the white suit.
Well, I don't know
the Masters.
If they make them that small, he'd be rolling up the arms
because
and the legs.
Caddies are massive.
Some of them are actually. Some of them are big boys. You get toting around one of those tour bags for a while.
You get him one of the karate outfits. Hey,
there you go.
A gi? Why am I wearing a gi?
Well, it's white. I don't know. I just tried to think of something that would work.
I love it. Yeah. Nope. That's it for my weekend. A little bit of golf. Hammer. What about you?
Man, nothing going on.
Baseball's wrapped up now?
Usually in these types of situations with other people, guys, you can make stuff up.
Yes.
But when you're asked at 6 a.m. on a Friday, like, you just admit you're a loser. Like, I got nothing. And I think Hammer's feeling the same way.
You know what? There's a little bit of baseball going on because they're going to take advantage of today, and they're going to head out to the park and probably spend about 3 hours out there having some fun. But we're going to have a little outdoor gathering of friends, kind of the finals, hey, have a good winter get together.
We'll never see you again?
We'll see you in March.
Wow.
I think is the
if
plan.
You could submit the location so we can notify bylaw. Be
again, did I not say outdoors and we will be spaced out, that we will not be in a tent?
Just going to involve a fire of some sort?
Exactly.
Some sort of heating system?
Yes, exactly. A little fire pit action.
We're in a fire ban, but that's okay.
Safe. There's no fire ban. I'll have my hose close by in case things get out of hand. All right. So we're going to do that during the day on Saturday, and then that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, we can certainly encourage people to get out today of all days and get whatever you're up to. Get out and enjoy it. Maybe a last day on a patio that's not walled in and is still allowed to be open, as many of them have been closed down by bylaw. But this will be the afternoon to get out and enjoy it, because we said it is going to be super warm today. 26. It's going to feel like, based on the weather we've had, it's going to feel like 30 degrees today. Yeah. That's how nice it's going to be.
And was following along. And actually, not surprisingly, but I was happy to see your Eagles win last night. But
Thank you.
I took a break from both the debate and the football game.
And went to bed.
I was just watching. I watched more Anthony Bourdain. I actually watched the George Best special again for the 10th time. And I don't know why I get drawn to these things. I already know the outcome. I'm not feeling this tonight. First of all, the football, but as far as the debate, like what more can be said at this point that is going to bring anything? And then people, when you watch some of these things weighing in, and I saw one poll where it said Trump won 92% to 8%.
He put that out.
I know. But my point is, I guess, J.R., I followed it in the past, and I've always followed the elections, especially when I lived in the United States. But what you just feel now when you turn anything on is that the incredible press that is on, right? Like, this is like, well, it's an election. But, you know, you're here to the final stages, and depending what the outlet is, you know, media-wise, it is this final push of legitimately willing to say anything to this point.
Yeah, well, you're trying to get reelected,
right?
And what people are terming and what many people agree is maybe the most important election in U.S. history.
Yeah,
so
yeah. I've never felt that as strongly here, but I maybe just haven't followed it with CBC and CTV. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just, where you just turn it on and you just feel like, and in the case of Fox News, I will say, you just feel some desperation at this point.
Yeah.
I missed it. We started watching The Staircase,
uh-huh.
some criminal
yep.
documentary.
Heard good things
on
about
Netflix.
That. Yep.
Was it better, at least, than the previous one a few weeks ago?
And I will say I was in and out because I was mainly watching the football game, but I turned over at halftime, and every time there's a break, I turn. First of all, the moderator, Kristen Welker, outstanding, fantastic.
Nice.
She did a great job. She kept them both under heel. The other thing that they did, I forgot to mention this yesterday when we talked about the debate being on, is the fact that they
button?
Had a mute button on. And so that... That stopped a lot of the shenanigans we saw, which made the debate debate number one such a disaster from all accounts. So it was much more a civil is taking it too far, but at least both sides were able to get their points out. So from that perspective, I thought it was excellent.
Yeah.
That being said, I mean, I think we didn't hear anything new, and there were no bombs dropped where somebody made an egregious mistake. Everybody's just trying to hammer their point home, trying to look presidential 10 days out from when the vote's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think Biden has realized, based on being in office for 47 years, just lie anyway at this point. Who cares? And from the business dealings for your family, can you look at anybody more corrupt? And also, just as far as a mixture based, and you do different paints and different things, has Trump changed up his makeup game here or his spray tan?
A little less orange?
No, I mean...
Orange?
He's like brown. whatever the hell he's gotten... It was from the night before. He had a bit of swass going too. It must have been a bit hot. But it was kind of dripping down his face, and he just looked super, super dark. So maybe, I don't know if he spent the weekend at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
That's a spray. I'm assuming it's a spray tan, right? It's not makeup?
If that's makeup, that's a whole lot of work
that's being done
every single day.
Yeah, exactly. So it's probably
but
a spray
I'm guessing
tan.
He's getting spray tanned every single day. I thought maybe one of the more interesting things was that, so at the end of the debate, the wives of the two candidates both walk up on stage for the obligatory photo op with the four of them up on stage. And Melania has, who also just had COVID, she's got a mask on. Joe Biden had walked on the stage with a mask and put his mask back on. His wife walks on with a mask and had her mask on. And Donald Trump, of course, has no mask on because he's
forgot it.
He's too tough.
Oh, yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
I'm going to be seen with a mask on. I have no problems with masks, but I'll never be seen with one on. Anyway, I thought that was an interesting. Anyway, we're not here to talk about politics. We're not here to talk about the debate. We could spend hours going through that Thursday night football game last night, which, quite frankly, and I'm a fan of the Philadelphia Eagles, that one lived down to expectations. Everybody who's not a fan of either team said this was going to be a terrible game. It was a terrible football game.
Yeah.
Like, it was poorly played. It was exciting. It went down to the final minute. My team won. They probably, if they had have played any other team than probably the Giants and maybe two other ones around the league, they would have lost that game last night. That's how poorly they played. But they had the good fortune of taking on the New York Football Giants, who they always beat, and they always seem to beat in heartbreaking fashion. And so they did that last night. So we'll come back and get into that in detail.
And the little bit of a crowd there as well?
Yes, same as last time. I think 5 or 6,000, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it just a little bit of the TV portion of it is that, hey, on a Thursday night with two bad football teams, boy, when you see an empty stadium as well, it's just kind of like, nah, not feeling that one, unless my Patriots are playing.
That's why he's back to Anthony Bourdain again.
Yeah.
Taking a look at my pick'em pool, I had the Giants, and I couldn't remember if I changed it at all.
And?
And I did change it, thankfully.
Good call.
Had the Eagles, had the 1 point.
E-A-G-L-E-S, and we both nailed our best bets. Both said the Eagles would win.
E-A-G-L-E-S,
Eagles! Giants would cover the 5.5, so there you go right there.
I took the rare under as well and won again.
So,
I think I've won the entire week.
3-0? Well, that makes two of us. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about that. There was one hilarious moment in that football game last night. The old turf monster rearing its ugly head. That was funny. Anyway, we'll talk about the game. We'll talk about the hockey. A little bit more into the Connor Brown signing yesterday, officially announced by the Sens. Some other hockey news from around the league. And, of course, it's Game 3 of the World Series tonight. We have Pierre McGuire joining us after 8, after 9. If you're going to watch some college football this weekend, one of the more interesting things you're going to find, and if you're a fan, you already know this, is, and maybe Chase Claypool is now the daddy of all the great young Canadian receivers that are dominating in U.S. college football. We're going to talk to Dave Naylor, had a chance to catch up with a couple of those players earlier this week. So Dave Naylor, we'll talk about the ascension of some really good young Canadian wide receivers in the U.S. college game, and who knows, maybe following Chase Claypool to the National Football League. We'll do all of that. We'll have a couple of chances for you to qualify in our TSN 1200 Pizza for a Year contest and, of course, award our daily winner from yesterday. And it is a Friday, which means it's a wrench-throwing Friday. So anything that has bothered you the last 7 days, let's toss wrench at it. Feel good going into the weekend. You can text us at 12-1200. You can tweet at us at TSN 1200 as we continue along. It is a Friday morning. We're glad you're with us. The weekend is here with Sports Radio, TSN 1200. That's a good way to start a Friday morning. Welcome back, everybody. 6:23. JR Simmer and Hammer with you. Pierre McGuire standing by. He'll join us after 8. We'll talk more hockey with Pierre. A couple of signings yesterday. NHL also announced, no shocker, Winter Classic now canceled, as is the All-Star Game. Man, we're talking about not having any plans for this weekend. There goes the weekend of January 28th and 29th out the window. I always build it around All-Star Weekend.
Yeah.
Darn it all. Anyway, All-Star Weekend canceled as well. No huge surprise. NHL still says, insists, still circle January 1st or thereabouts to be for the start of the new season, yeah, even though that's traditionally when the Winter Classic happens.
Yeah, as far as the outdoor game itself, JR, any rationale for canceling that? I guess, is it just the inability to have fans? Because I would have thought from putting that on that, you know, a different time where when you actually get into the All-Star game, the interesting part of this is that you may have an entire season where nobody that's on a Canadian team enters the United States. So probably maybe hard to play in the All-Star game.
That for sure. As far as the Winter Classic goes, absolutely. I mean, that's an event that's done to squeeze as many fans as they can.
Yeah,
so if you can't have fans, or you can only have 5,000 fans or whatever, what's the point?
Well, it just because in the United States, they built it up to be such a big event, and timing wise will be different. But certainly for NBC's coverage, that has really going back to, I think, was the first game in Buffalo way back in the day. It was just a kickoff where I just looked at it and thought, hey, from a TV spectacle, if I'm NBC, still like to put it on even if we don't have fans. But I know that changes the economics.
Well, it changes the economics. I also think it changes. I mean, what makes that event? There's two things that make the event. It's mainly for people who I think we all agree the hockey itself, from a pure entertainment point of view, is not that good, right?
Yeah.
The puck's bouncing all over the place, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But what makes it is the visual, right? The visual of the players and the coaches with the hats on and the scarves and everything, that part. But it's also the big pull away when they show 60,000 people at a game. Well, if the seats are empty, that totally ruins that. Right?
Yeah, it does. And just because it's Friday in late October, as a discussion point, when it was talked about having it here in Ottawa, Ian and I and other people brought up, boy, how cool it would be to have a game at Parliament. Then you talked about the crowd, the pop-up stadium ain't going to work. Again, there's too much going on in the world, but it would be a time where you'd put that rink, and in the case of the United States, hey, you throw it at the White House, again, just having some fun with it, where then the backdrop is incredible without having any people there, but there's just too much going on right now.
There is, and so no outdoor game, no Winter Classic, no All-Star game. That's a great kickoff to Wrench Throwing Friday right there. The NHL All-Star game, throw a wrench at that.
Just want to shout out some Blue Jays names, Alexander Doyle.
Are you saying that in all seriousness?
What?
No. By calling him Alexander Doyle?
No, what was his name again?
Doyle Alexander.
Oh, that. Hey,
thank you for now
listening back to that and you baiting me. And also,
that's not a bait. That's a chance for you to get out of it.
You knew exactly what you were doing. And Hammer, that may be the longest wrench in the history of the show. Like, do you want to play the whole hour? Yeah, good fun.
There you go. All right. Let's see. Got a couple other wrenches here. I feel sorry for young people in the USA, guys. The new old is Biden. Trump is not much younger. So wrench to that. That comes from Unsigned. I'm going to look at Kays and Tane in particular.
There you go.
Oh, nice.
See, right back at you. Equal wrenching.
Who's clipping all the stuff that Hammer says, JR? We got to get somebody on board with that.
Yeah,
No.
He doesn't make any mistakes.
Wrench to Michael Thomas. Had a championship team this year in fantasy football, and this guy was my first-round pick and hasn't played a snap. That's from Triple D.
It combines class winning and leading, technology and stuff.
And a reverse wrench to Pierre Dorion, the Sens, for giving good vibes to We Sens fans. Great signing in Brown. That comes from Schmoberger. So there you go. All right. Yeah. We keep the wrenches coming. Text us at 12-1200. You can tweet them at us at TSN1200. Again, if you're new to the show, unfamiliar with Wrench Throwing Friday, your acronym, Wrench Throwing Friday, is WTF, which normally you go, what the? All right, so this is something that's bothered you the last 7 days. Whatever it is, get it off your chest. Text it to us. We'll toss a wrench at it. Always makes you feel better heading into the weekend. All right, 6:27. Let's take you to the kickoff to week 7 of the NFL season. Not necessarily a marquee matchup. In fact, many would say a four fans only game, or if you had a fantasy football player, perhaps you were interested in the 1-5 Giants taking on the 1-4-1 Philadelphia Eagles. It was a disastrous game from many different ways. It was poorly played, poorly executed, but it was exciting. Went down to the final minute of the game. Let's take you to the Eagles on the Giants' 18-yard line. We've got under a minute to go, and Philly is down by 5.
One receiver to the right. Two to the left. Wentz, shotgun, steps up. Wentz, rifles, right corner. It is caught. Boston Scott, he's in. Touchdown. The Eagles have rallied here in the fourth.
And, so they go ahead, 22-21. They miss on the two-point convert, so the Giants get the ball back. And, of course, Daniel Jones, who is a bit of a fumble machine, turnover machine, proceeds to suffer a strip sack, fumbles the ball, Eagles recover, and hold on for the win. So the Eagles now, my Philadelphia Eagles, first place, baby. 2-4-1. Take that, Cowboys. Eagles are in first place with that one-point win over the Giants last night.
Yeah, and you look at Daniel Jones, you look at anything happening with the Jets, and people talk about negativity and talk about pressure. I just don't know, JR, if there's a tougher position to be than a young quarterback being drafted, being forced into bad football teams in good old New York. And I think this guy's got the talent, just like I think Sam Darnold has the talent. But, boy, to make forward progress there is really, really difficult. Even go back to the start of Eli Manning's career, right? I mean, it took a long time to get to, well, probably took to winning a Super Bowl to ever get any respect in that market. It is so much pressure.
Yeah. The thing with Daniel Jones is, first of all, he looks like Eli Manning. He's got that hangdog look to him. Yeah. Like, he just gives off, the worst of him was Jay Cutler. The worst, absolute worst vibe just from looking at a guy.
Yeah.
Was Jay Cutler when he was quarterback in the Broncos?
He always looked like
and
he
sharted,
and he knew.
Like who farted? He always had the who farted look on his face, right? And Daniel Jones is not much better.
Yeah.
Now he did provide though the comic relief of the night last night, and this really put the exclamation point on a bad football game played by two bad football teams last night. So this, I think it was in, I want to say it was sometime in the second half, I believe, third quarter, something like that. The Giants are down at this point. Jones looks like he's going to supply the play of the night when this happens.
Handoff. Nope, Jones is going to keep it. Jones is going to run it. Jones across midfield. It's a foot race. Can he go all the way? Daniel Jones to the 20, and he stumbles, and he falls down at the 10.
The turf monster got him. Stumbling, rumbling, bumbling. And he falls down.
There you go. That did it justice, but it didn't quite do it justice. We're talking, okay, this is a play from his own 12-yard line, and he does a keeper, and he goes around, and all of a sudden he's got nothing but open turf in front of him. And he is sprinting. He is going to score an 88-yard touchdown run as a quarterback, one of the longest in history. And then all of a sudden he just starts to, when there's nobody around him, he starts to stumble at about the 20-yard line and eventually falls down and gets tackled at the 8-yard line with it, as their announcer said there. The old turf monster grabbed him.
He ended up, first of all, on the run, he got over 20 miles per hour, which they're tracking, I guess, is the fastest the quarterback's run this year. He had that peak about midfield, JR, where you're at top speed, and you could just feel it. He got up on the toes, right, where all of a sudden, running out of gas, running a little too fast, but forget about the clip, and obviously for radio not going to work. His quote afterwards was absolute gold. Did you hear that? What did he end up saying? I was. What was it?
Yeah, here it is, right here.
Okay.
I don't know. I just try to run faster than I was running, and got caught up. So we finished the drive, scored a touchdown. So that was a relief.
I tried to run faster than I was running. Okay, let's everybody just stop for a second and let's think about that for a second. I tried to run faster than I was running.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that means.
Well, he got up on his toes and he's being chased, but you're right. The quote itself makes no sense.
No.
But I think just really added to the comic relief part.
Simmer, it makes no sense, but it makes sense.
Yeah, no, I know.
I tried to run faster than I was running. Yeah. Makes no sense, but makes sense. Anyway, it was comic relief at its best. It was high comedy. Yeah. This will be all over the blooper tapes, not only for this season, but for seasons and seasons and seasons to come. It puts an exclamation point on Daniel Jones and his career so far with the Giants. It puts an exclamation point on just the Giants franchise over the last decade, which has been Chris Berman, right? Bumbling, stumbling, fumbling. That's what that was last night. So anyway, that was an amazingly funny moment.
When was the last Giants Super Bowl? Has it been that darn long?
Well, 2011.
You forgot
your Patriots?
Oh, I can't. I don't even know the years. And actually, I was watching the game on the weekend, JR, and very sincerely, I didn't realize they had gone 10 years between, was that 04 and 14 of winning the Super Bowl? Like, I really didn't even, I thought, wow, that was a long time between Super Bowls. So as far as the three losses that they had of the nine, I can't remember the years other than, well, remembering the unbeaten season and the game itself, I think, being in Arizona.
All right, so the Eagles win it. Carson Wentz, that was a beautiful pass, by the way, that game-winning touchdown, and a great catch as well, kind of a one-handed. We're talking about a 5'6" running back who's doing the wheel route out of the backfield and catches it over the defensive back. Like, it was really but that was as good as it got. Yeah. Carson Wentz had... Well, I mean, you look at his, if you didn't watch the game last night, you go, well, he had 346-yard passing, and he had a couple of touchdown passes and a run, and he led them from 11 points down, and that's all good stuff. The only reason he had to do all that was because of how bad he was throughout the first half and the first three quarters of that game. There were just these, again, I go back to this as a fan of this team, and you're thinking you got this franchise quarterback who's now in his fifth year and has not yet learned to throw the ball away when you hold it. There's only a certain amount of time he's taken sacks. Then he throws up this stupid interception in the end zone when he just should have thrown the ball away. Like, this is stuff you expect out of your high school quarterback. That is still happening in year five with this guy.
And I even feel like
just so frustrating.
Yeah, some of your tweets, JR, I feel like you should be a consultant. I saw you breaking down the fourth down play.
The fourth down play? Okay, and this is on the coach. Like, the coach, Doug Peterson, man, he could do no wrong in the Super Bowl season.
Yeah, for sure.
He was aggressive. We all know the Philly special, right? Pulling that out of your backside in the Super Bowl on fourth down. I mean, that was
you show up the hoodie, always looks good.
It was amazing. But this year, it's like he is out to prove that he is, I don't know, smarter than anybody else. And he's coming off as dumber than anybody. There's a fourth down play, and the Eagles are down. And now you're getting me fired up. Fourth down play.
Yeah, good Philly, job, today.
They're on JR on Philly Talk Radio. First they're on time the, call. They're on the,
go ahead, caller. You're on the air. They're on the 3-yard line, and they throw a pass to a guy who's a wide receiver converted to a tight end because they've had so many injuries, who not only has never caught a pass this season, he hasn't caught a pass in his career. And they designed a play for a guy who's never caught a pass in the National Football League. And needless to say, it didn't work.
Yeah.
But, oh, my God.
But the funny part of that in sports, JR, is that all of a sudden, if he did catch it, how cool is that they converted a receiver to tight end? Nobody expected him to get the ball. I know what you're saying, but it is amazing. And I don't care. And this is and I'll just use an example. Working in Washington back in the day, Jim Schoenfeld came in as a coach. That year, everything he said, it was unbelievable. He was taking chances. It was the first year we eliminated the Pittsburgh Penguins. We're playing them game 6 at home. We're at the morning skate, JR. And we say, we look around the room, and we're like, what are we going to do? He's like, let's go golfing. And I'm like, go golfing the day of a game, even as a staff? We all went golfing. We ended up winning that night. two or three years into his tenure as a Washington Capitals coach, do you think he'd ever go out and golf? No, not a chance. Now he's wrapped up in the negativity, wants to hold his job, doesn't have any confidence. If somebody hears that you've gone out golfing, you'd end up getting fired. This is just sports. Like everybody wants to, from the outside, say, hey, stay bold. But all the negativity that wraps from within, most of these guys, it just that's exactly what happens. It becomes vacillation, right? Because you're so fresh and you're, you know, full of ideas when you roll in, and most of them by year three or four, even if they win, that's just long gone.
It's like Doug Peterson is out of ideas. That's what it's come down to for me.
You're not listening, right? Or like you can't. And the other thing that happens and is the worst part is that when you come in, and part is you're trying to talk and get a job. When you sit down with a general manager, you just talk about, oh man, Carson Wentz. I'm gonna work with him. Oh man, I love Carson. Now by year five, it's like, man, the GM's got to get me a better quarterback here. I can't win with this guy. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's when, you know what, I give you a team, and it's not always right if I'm a manager, but it's when you no longer have the solutions either, right? Everything becomes a problem, and that's probably when you have to change out your staff.
Yeah. The thing about Wentz is, like, you can see it. The pieces are there. You know, the size, the athletic ability, the arm talent, as they say in the football business. Like that throw last night on the game-winning touchdown, you guys seen that? That was an unbelievable throw.
And
he's got guys all over him.
To the inside shoulder as well, right?
Threads it right to a 5'6" running back who's in behind a guy right in the corner of the end zone. Like, it's a beautiful pass.
Yeah.
Okay, I understand you're not going to complete 100% of those, but that shows that you can do it. But his inaccuracy for the most part, and again, the worst part about watching him is, again, his inability to process the fact of when the clock is running out, when you're back there and you can't find somebody open.
Yeah.
Throw the ball away. Do not take sacks and do not throw balls up for grabs.
But this is also part of athletics where it is the tease. It is that one great play that they make, and you realize, because I'll be honest with you, strangely as it is, and I know it's at the end of the game, a high-pressure throw like that is no pressure for some athletes. You know what I mean? Like, if that doesn't get completed, it's kind of like, okay, lost a game, that's pressure. But the percentages you make in that, it is the consistency. I mean, that to me is when you look at the Tom Brady's and those other athletes, hey, it's not always glamorous, but it is just that ability to... And this is for goaltending. This is Craig Anderson in Ottawa, JR. You know what? It's not always flash and dash, but give me consistency. Just let me know on a nightly basis what I'm going to get.
Right.
And how many NFL teams, and especially at the quarterbacking position, which I think is the most difficult position in sports, have no idea week to week what you're going to get, right? You have no clue. And I know it's a team sport and there's lots of other factors, but that's the biggest part when it comes to quarterbacks and comes to goaltending. Just give me an idea of what the hell I'm dealing with here on a nightly basis so I can set my expectations.
Okay? I got a text that just came in and says, Wentz Carson is the man.
You know what?
I'm finding that we have a theme for the wrenches today.
That is solid.
Outstanding. All right, so the Eagles win at 22-21 over the Giants. They are 2-4-1 and lead the NFC East now. Giants fall to... Oh, they're not. They're 1-6 now, and they're not out of it. And that's the crazy thing to say, but the Giants at 1-6 are not out of it whatsoever. A game and a half out. In what is right now on course to be the worst division in the history of the National Football League.
In a year like this, if they end up winning the division, Jerry, you got to get the divisional championship T-shirt. Like, that has to be something just to create more humor to it, right?
That's true.
Or you're almost a little bit...
Because you know whoever they play in the playoffs is going to get thundered by 30 points.
Well, they will... Well, would they have home field all the way through?
No, just in the first game.
Just the first game, that's true, yeah. They'd have the worst record, obviously.
Yeah, and they would take on the best of the wild card teams. Well, actually, only one team gets a bye instead of two, so the three other division winners and then the three wild card teams. So you'd get the as the worst division winner, you'd get the best of the wild card team. So you
so
might
who,
get
who
a,
would be in a guesstimate? Who would they end up playing?
Well, you would get right now you get the likes of an LA Rams or a San Francisco whatever team comes out of the NFC West that doesn't beat or Seattle if some team ends up beating out Seattle for you're going to get one of those powerhouse teams from the NFC West in all likelihood. You might get a team like the Saints or the Buccaneers, whichever team doesn't come out of there. Although I don't think, despite the fact I picked them for the Super Bowl, the Saints are not looking like a Super Bowl team at all.
Sure.
And you know what I would like, actually, is I'd like the Chicago, as a Philly fan, I'd like the Chicago Bears to keep winning because I don't think the Bears are very good at all. But they're 5-1. The Packers could beat them for the division. The Bears could still have a great record. So there's the... I've just discovered it. The Eagles could win the division and host the Bears, and they could actually win that game.
Nick Foles is going to roll right back into town and beat you guys. Come on. You don't want that.
All right. Keith the Wrench is coming at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200. We'll take a break at 641. When we come back, we'll get into the hockey news, a couple of signings around the league. We'll continue to break down the Connor Brown deal and a look at what's left on Pierre Dorion's plate this offseason, which at this point consists of two players, Christian Yarros and, more importantly, Chris Tierney. What's ahead for those two players, and Tierney in particular? So we'll get into all of that discussion. Get set for Game 3 of the World Series as well.
This is TSN 1200.
We are back, 6:45 on a Friday morning. Keep the Wrenches coming at 12-1200. We'll talk to Pierre McGuire coming up later on in the show. And as well, Dave Naylor will join us. If you're going to be watching some college football this weekend, you're going to catch at least three leading receivers for big-time programs in the United States who are all Canadian, following in the footsteps of Chase Claypool, who's had an outstanding start to his NFL career with Pittsburgh's Steelers. Dave Naylor had a chance to catch up with them earlier this week, so we're going to talk to him about that coming up later on in the show. All right, hockey news. We'll get to Connor Brown in just a second. We kind of went through that in depth, but Connor Brown also joined us yesterday afternoon here on TSN 1200. But a couple other signings around the league. Denis Gurianov signs with the Dallas Stars. Former first-round draft pick, who I think had been sort of disappointing early on in his career, but then you watched him, and this is the great thing about teams that you normally don't watch a lot of, and you get to watch them night after night in the playoffs, and you go, well, that guy's actually a pretty good player. Yeah, that guy's pretty good. Yeah. Like, that's where my man crush on Miro Heiskanen began.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, I knew he was a really good player, but watching what an outstanding playoff he had. But Denis Gurianov was another guy. Had no idea the size he had. He won, what, a Game 7 in overtime, right? He won a series at an overtime winner. But 9 goals in the playoffs for Dallas. Anyway, he gets a 2-year deal with the Stars.
Yeah, and not crazy, crazy money. And I think still a little bit of wait and see and betting on himself. But you're right. And that combination with Rick Bonus also getting a contract extension. So some pretty good things happening in Dallas right now.
And Jake Virtanen re-ups with the Vancouver Canucks. You want to talk about guys who have an uneven start to their career? We're looking at a former top 10 pick, right? And Jake Virtanen, who has, it's just not really gone very well for him. He finally this year started to, maybe the light went off, not quite sure. Maybe the, Travis Green has had a good effect on him, but 18 goals this year for Jake Virtanen. At one point, there was talk of the Canucks actually trading him away to try to save some money. But anyway, they got a 2-year deal with him. Also for $2.6 million per season.
Should not comment on the person, although in his Zoom call yesterday, he seems easily confused. When he's on the ice, he doesn't have any hockey sense. He's very athletic, the exact kind of player that you should cut ties with. And that's what it is there. We were just talking about frustrating things. This guy can show these little flashes, but his overall ability to feel the game and play with others, it's a constant struggle.
Okay. Sorry, I was just looking up the year in which he was drafted.
It was a pretty strong year, was it not?
Yeah. He was not the 15 draft. I think he was the 14 draft.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah.
Was he the one caught in the nightclub during when they were getting ready to rock and roll? Decided he'd venture out for a night out on the town?
Yep, that's what I remember reading the reports.
You see some of the talent here, but these are really the players you become the most frustrated with. Because, as I said, he's a tease on the talent, but I don't think they're – well, I'm not a fan of his at all.
All right, he was the 2014 draft. So that was the draft. That's the draft where Ekblad went number one to Florida. Reinhart went number two to Buffalo. Then Leon Draisaitl, who has now turned out, obviously, to be the best pick of that at the top of the draft, goes number three to Edmonton. Sam Bennett to Calgary, number four. Ooh. Michael Dal Colle, number five, to the Islanders. And then Jake Virtanen. Hayden Fleury is kind of, he's not really kind of broken through with Carolina yet. William Nylander of the Leafs. Nick Ehlers to Winnipeg. And then number 10 was Nick Ritchie. That was the Sens pick, right, that they traded
For
Bobby Ryan. So that was the top 10. So overall, you look at Draisaitl, by far is the leading player in that top 10. Ekblad probably, and Reinhart, you'd kind of put maybe as next best. And after that, and Nylander, should mention William Nylander. And after that, and Ehlers, And after that, it's a significant drop-off.
Yeah, and you go back to that, never a Reinhardt fan. But in the case of Ekblad, hey, when you watch him as a junior and you watch him early on before he got the big contract, ran into some concussion issues, that was a stud in the making. But I thought his play overall in Florida, like a lot of young players, kind of lose their way, has really leveled off over the years.
Connor Brown, of course, re-upped with the Sens yesterday. We broke the news here on TSN 1200 of his three-year deal for $10.8 million in average annual value. Of $3.6 million. Connor Brown joined Ian and Lee on the drive yesterday afternoon. And, well, now that he's got, he knows for sure he's going to be with the Sens for the next 3 years, talked about where he feels he slots in.
I'll do whatever is asked of me. But, you know, I see myself, you know, I think I play well with top guys. And, you know, I have my whole career. And, you know, I think the game pretty well. So try to be a big part of the penalty kill. And, you know, it's a big part of the game. And try to be as well-rounded and detail-oriented, but I really do want to take steps forward offensively, and I think I have more and more to give. You know, so I'm not just looking to step back and just to be a defensive forward. I want to contribute.
I like that answer. I like anybody that says, you know who I play well with? I play really well with really good players.
Yeah.
Like, well, yeah. Put me on the line with all the scorers, coach, I can buff my stats up too.
Yeah, and kind of where they overloaded in Toronto was where he ended up getting squeezed out. Now you kind of look at the foundation of that team, and especially when Hyman was out of the lineup, JR, in Toronto, with the loss of Brown and Kadri, you admit lost a lot of those foot soldiers. I mean, very seldomly do you see three studs playing together. In the case of Boston, you know, that's a little different because those guys in a crazy way, especially Marchand and Bergeron, they're foot soldiers in themselves. They're just star players. So yeah, lots of great quotes there and problems. And he addressed, you're going to have what? LB, CB, you got DB and Dino. And what's the defenseman's first name again?
Josh.
So JB. And they
you
were
got three about, players and a broadcaster
yeah,
on Liam Brown.
And they were talking about that yesterday and straight out that for Logan Brown, he's Logie. But everybody else is Brownie. And so I think that can become very confusing. I can remember in Washington at one point, between Craig Berube and a couple of other places, we had three different Chiefs on our team as well.
Right.
So that became a little confusing for everybody.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. For the Sens, though, I mean, Connor Brown has seniority, right? So he gets to keep Brownie. And Josh Brown, you know, we don't know a whole heck of a lot about him other than he brings a little truculence to the back end.
JB's solid, though, right?
JB is solid, but again, it's a boring hockey nickname, so we got to give him something good that's right out of the blue, like Knuckles.
Yeah.
You know, I know that's Chris Nyland's nickname, but we got to give him something. And again, I don't know. He could come in here and as I often say, he could punch me in the face and I wouldn't know who he is.
Yeah.
But once we get to see him, if he brings the truculence, or maybe he should just be Truck.
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
Old Truck, for truculence in honor of Brian Burke.
Truck, you got to go Truckster then. Like you got to have a little, little more handle on there.
Yeah, and whenever you say Truck, I'm always, you know, I'm a little bit leery. You know, we tend to reverse letters on the show.
Yeah,
you know, we go with
the
Alexander Doyle. We go to Kane and or Taze and Tane and Kays. So we got to watch that. Maybe we don't want to go with Truck. For Josh Brown.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but that yesterday certainly had most of the fan bases. They kind of can take a seat now, and for some people it's never enough, and now they want to see Brady Tkachuk sign this week. They want to see the defense kind of revamp, but as I said, when you realistically look at the world we're in right now, if I told you once we entered into COVID, first of all, we kind of knew the draft, but I think Stutzel over Byfield is good. Sanderson, we'll see. I don't know him well enough. But if I told you they were going to add Murray, get Connor Brown extended, and add old Daddy, that's one hell of an offseason for the Senators.
It has been a very good offseason. On Brady Tkachuk, and we were going through yesterday with Pierre. I went through it while the interview was going on about, and there have been well over 100 signings in this offseason, starting with Robin Lehner after the playoffs ended, through all of free agency to the smattering of re-signings that have happened now. We only have, in terms of long-term extensions, 5 years or longer. I think I counted up seven guys. It is a very, very small number. And everybody has been kind of like, well, if you get Brady on 8-on-8, and while I don't disagree with that, I think the economics of the way the National Hockey League is working right now, let alone kind of Brady, the dad, where are the Sens going and all of that, the question marks they may still have about the Sens at this point.
Yeah.
I think it's very much looking like, and he's got still another year in his rookie deal that if and when he signs an extension, I think, in all likelihood, it is going to be a short-term deal of 2 or 3 years.
I can't disagree. Don't have a real feel for it. Now, big picture for organizationally where they're at contractually with a lot of players, I wouldn't have any issue if all of a sudden it was 8x8 and he realizes, wow, I'm getting some pretty good dough here, some security even for where the NHL is at and for a franchise. I'd still do that if I'm Ottawa. But hey, a whole lot is going to happen between now and I guess kind of mid-July as the calendar may reset, or that's kind of the goal of the National Hockey League. So hey, let's reconvene then and see what kind of season Brady has and see where the world's at.
Yeah, the interesting part for Ottawa is, and this is why, and I think we all agree that Connor Brown deal is pretty close to perfect. I mean, in terms of term, in terms of the length of the contract, I think 3 years is great for Ottawa. The money, I mean, you could look at the stats and argue, okay, it's maybe a slight overpay or whatever, but Ottawa does not have any cap issues at this moment in time. And if it's anything, it's maybe a little bit over, but it's not nothing even close to being excessive. Right now, they have another $17 million set to come off their books next offseason. Now, Brady Tkachuk at that point would have an extension, which will significantly bump up his pay. But by and large, they have now set themselves up through 3 years of tearing it down and getting rid of pretty much everything, and then ending up buying out the last of their really bad contracts and Bobby Ryan.
Yeah,
they have now set themselves up, if they do this right, that they can re-sign, they and if they stagger it and they re-sign the right guys to the right amount of money in the right term, and it's hard to do.
Sure. Yeah,
but they have now set themselves up in a perfect spot with all these young players that they could do this, where they can keep a large part of this core together as it grows. And we've seen from other teams, Toronto being an example, Chicago when they were winning cups, where you won a cup and all of a sudden everybody wanted to get paid at that point, and you had to get rid of guys.
Yeah,
like Ottawa is set right now. If they can follow through on this, and it's a big if, that they have put themselves in a really nice position at this point.
Yeah, no, for sure. And even Shabbat 8x8, we'll see. But no, you go through it. And Anisimov, that's kind of the after effects of getting rid of Zach Smith.
But he's off the books at the end of
this year. Well, that's my point. So that's just an expiring player. You hope that, hey, Zaitsev becomes a serviceable player on a better team. You hope that Colin White improves. And then if that, hey, it's never going to be perfect. But you look at that, and as you said, it gets pretty darn close where you start to look around and realize, wow, this has been well managed. And one of the things from the offseason, and credit to you to mention it, I mean, even to, because I kind of looked at this with Bobby Ryan, and it's a feel-good story, even your ability to step up and buy him out, which basically, and I'll do the math here while we're on the show, I mean, whatever the buyout money going out the door, the combination of he and Dadonov is probably the money you were going to pay Bobby Ryan anyway, right? Like they've turned that in financially to the same thing. So they got creative and they're a better hockey team.
Right. Bobby Ryan's buyout is, it's about $3.6 million next year, and Dadonov is making $5 million. So it's a little above. He would have gotten $7.5 million. They're paying about $8.5 million between Dadonov and the Ryan buyout. So, absolutely. You know, and Eugene Melnyk gets criticized by a large portion of the fan base. And, in many cases, we understand why there's a level of frustration. Absolutely. But that it takes a lot to stroke a check of that kind of size.
Yeah, it does. You know? And for Bobby Ryan, like I said, and I know he is very popular with the fan base. His whole story off the ice is incredible. But the component with him is that, first of all, he's a deteriorating hockey player, but he never seemed to really want to immerse himself in a leadership component, which is probably not his personality, which is fine. You can't force it. But if a guy like that was coming back and he said, you know what, this guy's like a grizzled old veteran and he's going to really work with the younger players, they just realize, you know what, this is a perfect time here for everybody to get a fresh start.
Everybody seems to, and people who maybe didn't follow the Senators that closely but fell in love with the Bobby Ryan story, which mainly revolved of him just being able to come back from you know, what was going on off the ice, and then having incredible game, right?
Yeah.
To the point where now I'm reading various kind of NHL pundits going, well, I'll tell you what, one of the great offseason signings was Detroit getting Bobby Ryan for $1 million.
Yeah.
He's going to be able to step in on the top six, and I'm going, okay, well, maybe Bobby Ryan has completely cleared all of the off-ice issues being cleared out of his life, has maybe cleared his head. But from a physical point of view, Bobby Ryan has not shown much of anything in his time here in Ottawa. I have. I don't have very high expectations for Bobby Ryan.
No, I don't, JR. And after the hat trick opening night, guys, what did the stat line end up looking like? And I also was one of the people saying, boy, maybe he comes out of this. And fitness-wise, one of the issues you run into, and this was when he first came here, and I got criticized quite a bit. I just said, hey, physically, this guy's never been a great skater. You're headed in the wrong direction. You can't make up for that later in your career, right? Like, guys that decide post 30 that they're going to start working out, it ain't happening. It doesn't work. And when you watch him play, the part that was always a threat, and I watch him as a junior, I watch him in the American Hockey League, I watch him as a pro, this guy could shoot the puck with the absolute best of them. And there was a point in about year three, and I think it might have been that Montreal series that they had, where all of a sudden he scored a goal from the half wall that just kind of squeaked through. It was one of the first times it was a lucky goal. His shot was gone. Now, a big part of that might end up being the hands and all the broken stuff, but that's where the guy was always a threat. And as soon as that was gone, yeah, I think people, like I said, this is people that watch highlights. They don't watch the guys on a nightly basis.
Yeah, and listen, at $1 million, it's a low-risk signing by Steve Yzerman. He's just trying to get his team back to respectability. But I think any expectation that all of a sudden Bobby Ryan is going to become a 30-goal scorer because he's back on a top two lines on a very bad hockey team, you're just not watching the games.
I agree. Now, I will also say it is really, and this is, again, we'll go back to some of the tees. It is hard to explain, though, how good he was in 2017 playoffs. And that wasn't just one game.
Nope.
Like his elevation, his ability to come off the wing, use speed, do different things. I guess you do look at that and say, oh, well, maybe 3 years later, maybe I wouldn't bet on it. I'm just saying, though,
that
to me wasn't just one game. Like he was a really good player in that playoffs.
I agree with you 100%. But that's also, and listen, credit to him, when the lights came on, the brightest, right, he performed. Now we're talking about going into a half-empty rink on a really bad hockey team
in Detroit.
And you get into game 17, and the record at that point is, 5-5-12 or whatever. Yeah, your motivation becomes very lean very quick.
He also needs really good players around him, right? It would be almost a situation of, guys that have gone in and played with Draisaitl and McDavid that score a bunch of goals, right? And you say, okay, well, they're able to do that because they've got world-class talent around them.
One quick wrench to end the hour. A wrench to Peterson, Doug. Claypool Chase is a great player. Why didn't the Eagles Philadelphia draft him? Keep it coming, everybody. You can text us your wrenches at 12-1200. You can tweet at us at TSN1200. We'll take a break. Get you the latest news from 580 CFRA. Run down the scoreboard, including details on the Eagles' win over the Giants last night. A look ahead to Game 3 of the World Series tonight and all the hockey news as well. We're coming back with Hour 2 next right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Or 1200 TSN.